Welcome back, everybody, to the Fighter's Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Jesse Rivas. How are you doing this week, Jesse?
I am blown away by two phenomenal fights. Do you realize that we're coming off the heels of the biggest gate in heavyweight boxing history in Vegas?
Absolutely unbelievable. Fury versus Wilder was just last night, and it delivered in a big, bad way. And Tyson Fury comes up just absolutely stomping through Wilder and just overwhelming him, picking up the seventh round TKO. What a night.
Amazing night. You know, we talked about switching trainers. How was that going to make a difference? Was that a case of Fury having mental health issues and maybe doubting himself, and he looked bad in the last couple
fights?
It's
inconsistency, right?
You know,
consistency is good for a fighter, especially like if he's had those issues before. You want to see consistency, and when they start switching trainers, man, that's a bad sign, right?
But he brought the Kronk style.
Yo. Well, you said last week the boxer usually beats the puncher, which is true. And it continued, but the boxer became the puncher.
Yeah.
He was delivering the harder shots. I mean, Wilder had a couple. I actually gave Wilder the second round, which I don't think was the popular opinion, but it's what I saw. I thought they landed pretty evenly, and Wilder had some decent shots. But, man, he wasn't able to get to him, and Tyson was just landed power shot, power shot, power shot, and a big combination early in the third just changed the entire fight for Tyson.
I think one of the biggest difference makers with the way that Sugar Hill, the new head coach of Kronk, the guy who was the nephew of Emmanuel Stewart, the genius that brought us the Kronk gym, was the fact that he had Fury fighting like a middleweight Kronk fighter, not a heavyweight Kronk fighter. If we think about the heavyweight Kronk fighters like Vladimir Klitschko or Lennox Lewis, they were guys who used the jab and used the difference.
Very conservative, yeah.
But I think it's because he proved that he had the chin to withstand it when he got up Undertaker style in the first fight against Wilder.
It could have been, or it could have been as simple as Fury, you know, this is his first fight with him, saying, this is what I'm going to do. And kind of setting out before he even signs to bring Sugar Hill on, like, this is what I'm training for. Can you train me to do this? You know what I mean? And setting it up that way. But whatever it was, it worked out. And Sugar Hill and Tyson looked amazing. And this could be a brand new combination that really just terrorizes some heavyweights. If I have to listen to this motherfucker sing for the next, like, 10 years, I'm going to go out of my fucking mind. He's got to get a new gimmick. Now that he's on top, it's like John Cena got to the top with the rapper gimmick and then changed it up to be, like, a different thing. He's got to change it up. It's too fucking corny.
I wish that I agreed with you because I feel that way. But did you see the way the arena started singing along?
The arena. They're sheep. They will eat from my hand. I will tell them what to like, and they will love it.
Nobody booed. Everyone sung. It seemed like you were in an Irish pub.
It was a very pro Fury crowd, right?
Yeah.
It was very. They were chanting "You big Dosser" at one point. Like this was a like UK crowd. Over here to support their big round boy.
So one of the things that we saw is a lot of new viewership in the boxing, people who don't normally watch boxing. And the first thing everyone started talking about before the fight was, oh, this is a 50-50 fight. I got my money on Wilder. Immediately following the fight, we had a lot of people say, Wilder sucks. I always knew he was a terrible fighter.
Well, that's because, I mean, that's the casual's curse, right? Like, you know, they love hard, they die hard, right? They hate hard. And I think that star-wise, I think that Deontay, had he won, would be a bigger star than Fury having won.
Yes.
I think that Deontay has more star potential, just because Tyson's weird, right?
Yeah.
And like, it's you know, it's outside the norm.
And Wilder's cool.
And Wilder's cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's like a Black Panther character or something.
Yeah.
That's how he markets himself, at least. Like, when he came out with the thing and all that.
All black everything?
All black everything.
Do you feel like that triggered some white folks?
No. No more than seeing any black... If you were going to get triggered by that, like you could just get triggered by every black person doing okay.
Because remember when Beyonce did the Super Bowl and she did the Black Panther pose? People lost their freaking mind.
I think that was manufactured. I think that was like people like, oh, I bet white people hated that. And then just going around like, yeah, white people hated it, you know, without ever like confirming. Because like most white folks are just like, okay, you know, they saw Black Panther too. They also went to the movie.
True. Fair.
It ended up, man, that ear looked rough. Let's talk about the towel throw.
Yes.
Let's talk about the corner stoppage. I liked it. What did you think?
I thought they shouldn't have let him out for that round.
Man, I texted you the round before, and I said Wilder's corner has to make a really tough decision here. And yeah, I agree. He didn't need to go back out.
I watched that fight with my parents, and my mom walked out of the room the round prior, and she's like, "They need to stop it."
Yeah.
And I was like, "My mom knows that they need to stop the fight."
Yeah.
Why don't boxing experts? Because I'm yelling, "Stop the fight!" And like,
it was getting bad. It was getting to the point where it was like, "Man, this is going to affect his career if we're not careful."
The opening punch of that first round from Fury to Wilder was immediate. Like, everyone in the room was like, oh, they need to stop it. They need to stop it. And that's when you text me, actually, because it was like, he's not okay. His equilibrium's off. His ears, like, dripping blood. And then when he got trapped in the corner, and Deontay's not necessarily the best boxer. His footwork's not the best.
But he's better than that.
When he's trapped in a corner with Fury just unleashing shots, it could have been really bad.
Yeah. And he's better than that. That's a big distress sign, right? He never gets trapped up in corners, you know, for extended periods of time. No, he was clearly in so much trouble. And respect to him, he wanted to go out on his shield, but his job is to want to go out on his shield. His corner's job is to get him out of there when the fight is no longer winnable.
When a 6'8", 270-pound guy who outweighs you by like 50 pounds is throwing bones at you...
Man, sometimes you just need to get out of there.
Yeah, you got
to
get out of there.
Man, and we would say the same thing if the situation was reversed, you know, and Deontay's laying fire on a Fury in the corner or something, and he can't defend himself. Man, when the fight's over, it's over. The corner did a great job.
I saw a phenomenal commentary in Spanish with Marquez and it was Marquez and Eric Morales. And it was almost fitting to see those two guys talk about it because I have seen Eric Morales have a war, go too far, and then was never the same again.
That's a great point.
So it was almost like immediately when they showed him on the screen afterwards, I was like, that's the example I was just talking about. You sometimes want to save your fighter because he may not be the same after that fight.
Did you hear what Max Kellerman said?
I did not.
Max Kellerman said they were talking about so I was watching the I almost said the white folks commentary, the English commentary. So I was watching the English commentary as I'm one to do, and they were talking about who's the baddest man on the planet. This fight is going to determine who the baddest man on the planet is. Max Kellerman said, "No, the baddest man on the planet is whoever the UFC heavyweight champion is, because that's much more like a real fight."
Oh,
I know, crazy, right?
That's adorable.
I mean, like, I think that he is correct, but like to hear that on that broadcast is insane to me.
I feel like he was trying to win like internet brownie points.
He was trying to be like, I'm not like Stephen A.
Yeah.
don't think that this is not my man's. Whose man is it? Is not my man's.
I think he thought about that like hours before, and he was like, "I don't care what happens. I'm going to say this tonight.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to win so many fans." So where do we go from here? We talked about last time that, you know, just because you had a bad show and you shouldn't switch trainers. I have seen a laundry list of news feed. Every expert is saying Wilder needs to switch camps.
No, I don't think so. I just, man, he, you know, got hit with some really rough shots. I don't think another camp is going to be able to mold what Wilder has into a new packaging. You know what I mean? He's so unique with what he brings. I think messing with that formula is dangerous, almost in a way. You know what I mean? Like, you might kill the goose that lays the golden egg.
But we saw how great Fury looked with new camps.
That's true. That's true, but Fury's
each camp,
so much,
he gets better.
But he's so much more diverse. You know what I mean? He's so much more, not every camp. He's up for this fight. This is not the same guy who fought Otto Wallin.
Yeah.
Right? No, he gets up and down with performances, which, by the way, might come back to bite him. We've seen with, like, John Jones, for example, goes up and down with opponents. And it almost bit him in the ass this time. People need to be careful when they do that. I think that Fury was so much more diverse coming in, that for him to switch trainers is different than Deontay, who's this very unique, singular combination. You know what I mean? Like, I think a Fury can play with the levels a little bit more.
So where do we see Deontay go from here?
Man, now he's in the wilderness, right? Now he's got to come back. This is where a lot of careers have second halves, and a lot of great heavyweights have great second halves to their career. Foreman, Ali, Tyson. I mean,
Klitschko.
Man, we can go down the list, right? Everybody. Fury, to a large extent, is having like almost a second half to his career, even though he's still undefeated. And I feel like this is now where we're going to start to see. And some guys, man, they lose that first fight, they're done forever. Spinks, yeah.
So here's three options that I've looked at for Wilder. He can fight Ruiz, an in-house battle.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because you know what that sets up.
Yes.
There you go. That's it. That was, if we're going to name one person, that is the guy. Because then we do still get to the Joshua Wilder fight that we were all salivating for 2 years ago. But now there's this new level of like, man, now what's going to happen? Because they've both been chinned, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like when we had Liddell Vanderlei.
Yes.
And it was like, man, this is like 3 years past his expiration point, but that almost makes it better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the fight ended up being incredible.
And it's interesting because I guess they were betting on Wilder winning. Because they were already negotiating Ruiz versus Ortiz. So Luis Ortiz versus Andy Ruiz. But now we can get Ruiz versus Wilder.
I think that's a way better fight. I think it's a way better fight. I love Luis Ortiz, but man, that's it. Because then it almost becomes like a beat the clock kind of thing.
Then the other option
is... By the way, Ruiz Wilder is not a nothing fight.
Yeah.
There's something to that fight.
There's money in that fight,
there's
too.
A lot of money in that fight. There's a lot of... crossover appeal in that fight. I think the public would bite on that fight because it's like, man, the last time we saw both these guys, they were getting their asses whooped. Who's going to, like, come back?
And it's an easy fight to make.
Exactly.
They're both on Fox. They both have the same promoter. I mean, it's literally just, it's such a
You don't even have to sit down at the table with anybody. Yeah. Like, you just have to, like, sign off on it. Yeah, it's so easy.
Then the other option is take less money to fight against Joshua. And have the Joshua fight.
If you can go right there, maybe. But I think go through Ruiz first. Build the anticipation. You know, hit Joshua, who's now on an upswing again. Hit him on an upswing, too. You know, don't be crossing your momentums there. I think that's a more dangerous fight if he goes right to
Because he Joshua. Can cash out now.
Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of like when Couture lost. Couture beat Tito Ortiz. So then Tito Ortiz was like, sure, I'll fight Liddell.
Now I'll fight Liddell. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And then afterwards, he's like, man, Ken Shamrock again. Yeah, no problem. Like, just taking all these dudes and, like, whooped his ass before. Vitor Belfort. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. And then the last option is he already has a rematch clause with Fury. Does he jump right back into a rematch?
I mean, no. He has the rematch clause. Both guys had a rematch clause. But I think the general logic for a reason was if you get your ass whooped, take some time. Right? Come back later. So I don't think you should... jump right into a rematch. What do you think?
I don't think he should jump back into a rematch. That was pretty one-sided.
It would be hard to sell.
Yeah.
It would be hard to sell that as a rematch. It's like if we tried to rematch McGregor versus Cerrone. Like, man, yeah, I'm sorry. You got your ass whooped a little bit. It's just not going to happen. Or the BMF fight or something. Like if we tried to rematch Masvidal Diaz. Doesn't work.
Yeah. It would be a hard sell.
Yeah,
it would be a very hard sell. So Fury, where does he go from here? I think it's almost impossible that he's going to have the unification fight next against Joshua.
No way.
It's a beautiful fight. I would love to see it happen. I don't think it happens.
No, he's going to end up fighting like a Joseph. Like I feel like he's going to like take a step back and fight like a Joseph Parker maybe or like a like Pulev, like some like, you know, A-minus tier kind of guy who's tough, but
I think he fights really Charles Martin next.
Really?
Because Charles Martin developed he talks so much trash against Joshua. He developed like a fan, not a fan base. I mean, he developed fame in
a little
the UK.
Notoriety.
Yeah. Notoriety in the UK. That fight in Wembley, I think, would be a pretty big fight. I don't think they could sell it in the US. Because even though Charles Martin is a US champion, I don't think anyone knew
who
he was.
Yeah, it could be a Charles Martin. I believe you.
With that said, Charles Martin actually looked better against Gerald Washington than Deontay Wilder did against Gerald Washington.
but also, how much does that mean? Because Deontay's so unique, it's like you can win 10 rounds against Deontay and lose the fight. You know what I mean?
I'm looking at the heavyweight division right now.
Which, by the way, that did make the fight interesting when you were watching it. There still was a party where it was like, but maybe. You know
exactly.
What I mean? Like, I don't know that the fight's over.
Dillian White. He's on the other side of
Could
the
be.
Fence in the UK,
Could
so
be.
I don't think he fights against Fury.
Mm.
I would love to see it. He wanted Deontay because that's a possibility, but I don't think because of the cross promotion, he's on the same side as Joshua.
So you start up on all this like sides of the fence stuff, and it's just like it's like trying to listen to a little kid. Like, well, no, but Spider-Man couldn't really team up with Batman. One's Marvel and one's DC. Like, you know what I mean? Just like, man, I don't know. I thought they were both toys.
If I look at the whole top 10, almost everyone is blocked out of fighting Fury. Because I don't see... You can't do...
Do you think...
You can't do Usyk. You can't do... Like, all these guys are gone. So it's like... It's going to be very tough to get him an opponent.
I would love to see him and Usyk. So do you think he tries to entice the Wilder fight again, just to get something, any spark. You know what I mean?
I think that's what would have to happen.
Because if you're telling me that he's got nobody, well, he's got the rematch clause with Wilder, but Wilder has to agree to it. Wilder has to exercise the clause.
Yeah.
It's not like Fury can demand a rematch with a guy he just beat the shit out of. It doesn't work like that. So I think that that might be interesting. We'll see that in the media. Tyson likes to really put himself out there and play mind games, so he won't be quiet if that's what he wants. So we'll find out soon enough.
Man, to be honest, I'm actually more excited to see the trajectory of where Wilder goes from, because PBC is screwed. Yeah. PBC, his promotional company, at one point when they had Deontay Wilder with the WBC, and they had the unified champion with Andy Ruiz in-house, they considered doing a huge political move and creating the PBC Heavyweight Championship with having their two heavyweight champions unifying. Boy, have things changed in 6 months.
Should have pulled the trigger. But they had to do Ruiz Joshua too, and it was just never going to be a real option. I mean, for as close as it was, it really never was that close.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, as far as options go.
We also had – do you want to talk about the Charles Martin fight?
We can talk about the Charles Martin fight. All right. Looked good. He looked better than he has in the past. I think it's the best Charles Martin I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I would say. But it comes against kind of a B-minus kind of guy in Gerald Washington, who's not the highest level.
But we thought he was a C fighter, so.
You know what I'm saying, though, right?
It kind of was a step up for him.
Yeah, it was a good Charles Martin. I didn't see anything that would strike fear into the top 10 guys. But it was a tough Charles Martin that night.
So Charles Martin, when he lost to Anthony Joshua, he made $8 million. And here's a guy who had only made $35,000 a fight. So he just started being like an Instagram whore and just like spending money and living at large.
Kind of like Ruiz.
Yeah.
Except he did it after the fight.
But now he's 33 years old. He's kind of blown through his money and he's hungry again from what he says. And I guess he's always hungry, because I don't know if you saw that Lennox Lewis was making fun of the gut that he was sporting into the ring.
I mean, the Ruiz comparison is getting more and more correct.
Yeah, so it's a bigger, fatter Charles Martin. But he did look disciplined in there. He looked great, and he got the knockout. So he positioned himself. Politically, he's on the right side of the fence to be able to fight Fury next.
I think that Charles Martin in the UK does make sense. I won't be surprised if we go there, but let's see what Fury does, because Fury might try to draw in that Wilder rematch.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would do that, though. Man, I'll be way easier to beat up next time. Trust me, I'm going to start drinking. I'm going to start smoking. You should fight me again.
Emmanuel Navarrete fought in the undercard. What did you think of him finally getting big exposure?
I was happy for Emmanuel Navarrete. I'm happy for the littler guys. And I think that he made the most of the situation, got the stoppage win. What did you think?
I thought he looked great. I thought he got a little too hungry headhunting. But, I mean, the Filipino challenger couldn't really catch him. Like, he had great technique, but he just had bad distancing issues. Or maybe it might have been Navarrete just being able to create that distance problems for him. But, I mean, he looked great.
I thought there was a pop difference, too. Yeah. I thought Navarrete was hitting with a little bit more force every time they were connecting.
But I don't necessarily feel like this was necessarily the fight to put him over to
kind of create. He's not crossover yet.
He's not crossover. In that way. He does need to move up, though. He's big for the weight class. He barely made weight for this fight. And all the big fights are above. I mean, he could fight Shakur Stevenson. He's got Warrington up there. All sides of the fences, he could create big fights.
I agree. Time to move up. Man, why are you killing yourself to make less money? You know? Doesn't make any sense.
We also had UFC action and potentially the fight of the year candidate. I just watched it. I don't know what I watched. It was Hooker
well,
versus
tell
Felder.
That. We're supposed to like analyze this in some like a fun, comedic, but still informed way.
That's well, I mean, I know what I watched. I watched a phenomenal fight. I watched a back and forth fight. But if you were to put a gun to my head and say at the end, they were like, who won this fight?
Man, I have
I don't know.
Man, I have no idea. I scored it. I was doing my best to score it, but holy fuck, what a hard fight to score. I gave it 3-2 Hooker. That is how I saw it. But man, you tell me Felder won. Man, I agree. Look at how good he did. He did so good. But so did Hooker. They both did amazing in this fight. Do you know, in both their careers coming into this fight, both their UFC careers, and they both had 9 wins looking for their 10th, and both had been outstruck a distance in every fight they had had. or not in every fight they had, but they, in their careers, they had never, they had always had distancing problems. And it showed here because they beat the shit out of each other from distance.
Yes.
Back fists and head kicks and body work and big right hands. I think Dan Hooker's for sure got a broken jaw.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for, I mean, it was so fucked up. But they just kept coming. It was unbelievable. Paul Felder, do you think he's going to keep to that retirement?
I don't know, man. He looked great. I think that's the best Paul Felder I've ever seen.
It was an incredible Paul Felder. It was an incredible performance from him. After the fight, he takes the gloves off and he says he wants to spend more time with his family. He's really considering retiring. Now he's kind of backpedaling. His team is like, oh, no, you know, at least a couple more. He's also got to consider he's in a rare UFC position where he has a little bit of a soft landing because he has the UFC commentating job, right? And he has the analyst job. There's a lot of people who'd kill for that. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that was the last Paul Felder we ever saw. Man, you're going to go out on top.
He arguably won, man.
He arguably won. He's right there.
If I had to give it to someone with slight edge, and I will...
Pride rules.
Yeah, I will go back and forth on this one. But I feel like he did more damage in the fifth round. So even though Hooker did get the takedown, I kind of felt like he did the most damage in that round.
I'm not mad at it. Man, could we just run it back?
Yeah.
Because I'm starting to think what's next, and I'm looking at the rankings. So these guys were 6 and 7. Out of these top five, Tony Ferguson, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, Justin Gaethje, Donald Cerrone. Maybe Donald, maybe Dustin. They're both coming off of losses, so we could kind of...
I think Dustin Hooker in New Zealand is a great fight.
That is a pretty good fight. Yeah. Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker is a really, really good fight.
Or Gaethje. Gaethje Hooker.
That was the fight that Hooker called for after. He said, yeah. I think, through the fucking broken jaw he had... But man, with that much, he had a lot of problems with Paul Felder's hooking, and Justin Gaethje hooks with the best of them.
Yeah,
he's gonna hook a hooker.
Yeah,
I feel like fucking Angelo Dundee up here.
Is he waiting? Is Gaethje just waiting for the winner of Tony versus Khabib?
Sure.
So
for
he's
sure.
He's next in line, right?
I think so for sure.
I feel like that's why we haven't seen a fight announcement.
Yeah, because he was, I mean, his last win was a really pretty quick knockout over Cerrone. He didn't take any damage. There's just not really any options for him because above him in the rankings, you have McGregor, Poirier, Ferguson. Obviously, Ferguson's out. Poirier's coming off of a loss, and McGregor, you know, if he could get that fight, I'm sure he would take it, but McGregor's kind of doing his own thing.
I don't think McGregor wants any part of Khabib.
Do you mean Justin?
No, I mean like Conor, like because Conor's above Justin in the
In rank. Terms of like taking the title shot, I agree. Yeah, he's at least a fight away.
Yeah, at least a fight away. I don't think he wants that fight at all next.
And I'm talking if he won one more, you might be able to then talk him into a Khabib fight. Yeah. I think Conor would be just fine, like with three or four fights right
at 170,
now. At 170, 155, find interesting fights. Man, maybe fucking Dan Hooker and Conor McGregor. What does that look like? That would be cool.
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool. Dan Hooker takes a lot of damage. Could he, you know, let's see what he can make.
That
happen.
Does nothing for Conor, though.
I know. But yeah. It would be cool.
This but fight, man, this fight.
You know, John Jones reaches back and fights an Anthony Smith once in a while. Maybe Conor McGregor could, too.
This fight was really like two mid-carders fighting. It would, like, neither one of these are like world champs. I don't believe either one of these guys would be Khabib.
I agree. This is like watching, like, yeah, Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit fight for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much.
Man, okay, these guys are not going to be The Rock and Stone Cold. But
although,
like,
both those guys became world champions.
They ended up being world champions, but you know what I mean. But they were never main guys.
Yeah.
You can be a world champion, but you're not a main guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, Hooker, good for him. Really happy for him. Paul Felder, might be the end of the road for him. If so, he's done a really cool job. He still has a really decent paying job.
How long can Hooker do this? He gets fucked up a lot.
He gets fucked up a lot. Speaking of getting fucked up, have you been keeping up with this, like, Diego Sanchez?
I have not.
Man, so his trainer, who is, like, wildly incompetent, went on the Luke Thomas radio show and gave this really bizarre interview. And he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. He's putting him in a ton of danger. He went to the commission before Michael Chiesa fought Diego. And he said, I have this grappling hold that if Diego were to apply it, would kill Michael. And I need to run this past you guys. And they say, sure, show it to us. It is a front headlock, right? So like a guillotine. but then he rotates them around like a pro wrestling neck breaker and then drops like a Stone Cold Stunner. That was his plan on what to do if Michael Chiesa shot in for a takedown. Do a reverse Stone Cold Stunner. And they went to Michael Chiesa and they showed it to him and said, here's the move he wants to do to you. And he said, let him try. And yeah, he's just like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. He's all about like spiritual energy and like shadow chasing. And like, he looked back at that Michel Pereira fight. Did you see Michel Pereira versus Diego Sanchez?
No.
It was a total ass whooping, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I did see that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And he ended up throwing the knee and getting DQ'd. He was like, no, look at this. It looks like he gets kicked in the head, but actually Diego blocks it in three different ways and then redirects the force back through his leg so that it actually almost rocks his opponent when he throws the head kick. Like, it's just this stuff that makes no sense. And, man, it's got me fucked up. Diego's going to get fucking killed. He's got a wildly incompetent trainer.
That's crazy.
It's really bad.
You know, it's wild. I was talking to my nephew, and he was talking about Diego Sanchez, and he was like, this guy used to be good? I'm like,
yo, he used to be the shit.
When was Diego good? I was like, do you remember when you were four and you're in college now? Diego, you know how you're an adult? When you were four, that's when Diego was the shit.
True or false, Diego Sanchez has been in the UFC the entire time you've been an MMA fan?
No.
No, you were an MMA fan before The Ultimate Fighter 1?
I became an MMA fan during the rise of Tito.
Okay. So for me, he has been in the UFC in the entirety of my MMA fandom. I've not known one day. There's not been one day where I didn't know about MMA and Diego Sanchez was not in the UFC. It hasn't occurred.
It's always weird when like that guy does go away, because for me that was Oscar De La Hoya.
With
boxing.
Yeah.
The entire time I watched boxing, like, that was the guy. So when he retired, it was like, oh.
Man, Pacquiao. I'm still waiting on Pacquiao to get out of here. Man, what the fuck? But he keeps roiding himself to the fucking top of his head, so he's okay for now.
So this, you know, just going back to the whole Fury thing, I know this is like a really weird transition to go back.
No, please.
To all the...
It's a really weird show.
Yeah, to all the fans, all the, like, casual fans who never watch boxing except when it's a big fight... Do you know how hyped they were when I told them? I was like, yeah, you know Tyson Fury's best friend, Billy Joe Saunders, who's from the same gypsy tribe as him? He's actually fighting Canelo next. That actually built up that fight, because they were like, what? He's got, like, there's more gypsies, and one of them's fighting Canelo, and he's a champion? Like, it really kind of boosted that up. I feel like that rub is probably going to push that fight bigger come Cinco de Mayo.
If they can tell that story. I mean, saying it to three drunk bros in a bar is one thing, but, like, they have to get in there and tell the story themselves, right?
But yeah,
it would have been nice if we could have plugged that on that night, if we could have gotten in there and talked about Canelo and Billy Joe last night when this was all going on. That would have been way better. Because then, obviously, you can tell that fucking story.
But when you do the build-up, and you start, like, seeing, like, how Billy Joe Saunders helped Tyson Fury come out of drug addiction and depression.
Yeah, but how much is that gonna, like, how you got fucking 12 seconds. You fucking YouTube ad, you can skip in 5 seconds. You gotta tell that story quick.
But you know how they do, like, those countdown shows?
Yeah, but people only watch those for, are you gonna watch the fucking thing?
True.
Like, we're not getting... non-boxing fans going in to watch Billy Joe Saunders' training camp.
Fact.
And finding out about his story. So it's not going to help us.
UFC action this weekend.
UFC action this weekend. We were talking about world champions a little while ago. I'm excited to see this guy fucking win a world championship. I'm really excited to watch this guy win a world championship. Joseph Benavidez is taking on Davison Figueiredo for the vacant 125-pound championship happening in Norfolk, Virginia this upcoming Saturday. Benavidez has been the Cinderella of this division forever. He was in the finals of the original Flyweight Championship Tournament. He had a rematch with Demetrius Johnson, got knocked out. I mean, he's just been stuck behind. Beat Henry Cejudo. And because of that, because he beat Henry Cejudo, Cejudo would never give him a rematch. Never wanted to risk his title that much. And finally, he's getting his decent shot.
Man, it has been so long. I believe that it was 10 years ago when I saw him fight against Dominic Cruz in a very close fight for the 135-pound title. And I thought, wow, if they made 125, this guy would 1,000% be the champion. Well, I was wrong, and maybe this weekend I might be proven right. but he's fighting against a tough Brazilian who, with the exception of his fight against Formiga, he's looked phenomenal in the UFC.
He's looked absolutely incredible. I think he's like 8-1, 9-1 or something. Yeah, I mean, let's look at his resume here. He beat Jared Brooks, Morales, beat John Moraga by TKO, beat Alejandro Pantoja, beat Tim Elliott by first-round submission. This guy has been on an absolute tear. Did drop that fight to Jussie Formiga, but Formiga is absolutely one of the best in the world, and it would be a good guy to challenge him next if he were to win. But Joseph Benavidez has been on a run himself. Beat Formiga in his last fight, head kick knockout. Beat Dustin Ortiz. We had that win over Cejudo, Zach Makovsky. I mean, this guy's beaten who's who at 125. He deserves this title shot so much. The only blip on his record, a year and a half ago, he lost to Sergio Pettis by split decision. Really close fight. I think that it's time, man, right? Is it not time for J-Bo?
The time is now.
The time is now.
The time is now. Yeah, I want to see that. The champ is here. You can't see me. The time is now. No, I cannot wait for this
fight. 5'4", short kings unite. You got this.
I'm very excited to see this fight. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's an upset and I see...
I know, me too. I'm so afraid there's going to be an upset. Figueiredo hits like a truck. He's 17-1. He was like 15-0.
He's younger,
killing
too.
Everybody.
He's
not that young. He's 32.
Oh, okay.
And Benavidez is 35. So it's only because we saw Joe when he was like 20 years old.
Yeah.
You know, we've been following this guy forever. Figueiredo, not the youngest guy, but super explosive, super fast. Really gets after it with the striking. Uses his hands really well. Uses his angles really well.
It's not a coronation.
Well. It's not a coronation. This is a dangerous fight. But I think that Joseph Benavidez is going to get him. I think that his wrestling is going to pay off. He's shown a really, really good chin before. The only time he ever got cracked was that one fight with Demetrius. I think it's time. And he's only lost to really elite guys. His losses are to Dominic Cruz twice.
What year was that?
It was 2009 and 2010. You're right, 10 years ago. I know.
It's such a long journey. Like, I cannot not go with Benavidez. I mean, I know he's good.
I know. It's almost like we have to.
You have to. He's fought the toughest sons of bitches in the world for over 10 years. Because he didn't just become a challenger. He beat a lot of great people before fighting him.
Even before fighting Dominic Cruz for the title, it was like, when is this guy going to get a title shot? Yeah. And that was like 10 years ago. Yeah, he was like undefeated. He beat like Jeff Curry and he beat Ronnie Yaya. He beat Miguel Torres. Like, he was beating bad motherfuckers.
He beat Miguel Torres.
Don't realize Miguel Torres was the baddest motherfucker around at one point.
He was one of the pound for pound best fighters. I think he was like top two or top three pound for pound best fighter in the world at the time.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So I'm excited for it, but I'm right there with you. It's a little bit like, please win. The rest of the card really isn't great. It's a Felicia Spencer co-main event. It's not a great card, but it'll be cool to see that. Anything else?
Yeah, follow me on social media, Jay Rivas Comedy on Instagram and Twitter. I don't think I've used Twitter in about 10 years, to be honest. So just follow me on Instagram. Why not? Look at the stories. I post crazy shit all the time. And follow me on Facebook, Jay Rivas.
Follow me, all of those places. Follow the show, subscribe to the show, and we'll be back next week here on the Fighter's Block.